the value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett.
Just when we thought the pandemic was nearing its endgame, along comes a variant that changes the rules.
Developing right now, a new COVID variant, and this one is coming on strong.
Health experts say they are concerned about this variant given the large number of mutations. So here's what we know so far. So this new variant was first detected in South Africa 2 days ago. After meeting today, the World Health Organization is calling this variant Omicron. They're classifying it as a highly transmissible virus of concern.
As always, I must stress this, as always with a new variant, there are many things that we just cannot know at this early stage. But our scientists are learning more hour by hour. And it does appear that Omicron spreads very rapidly and can be spread between people who are double vaccinated. There is also a very extensive mutation, which means it diverges quite significantly from previous configurations of the virus.
Now, there have been several countries where the Omicron variant cases have been confirmed. And keeping that in mind, India has now put forth a slew of fresh guidelines, particularly for travellers coming in from other countries.
It's rattled markets.
Yeah, good morning. The markets are in a free fall a little bit here this morning. Melanie, with this variant of concern leading to a sell-off for world stocks. So the Dow Futures Index this morning is down over 800 points. The European benchmark stock indexes are down over 3% each right now. Germany's a mess with COVID again.
And has the potential to stifle the global economic recovery.
Started hearing about this new variant, like I think it was Thursday, and then we woke up on Friday. There's like all these new restrictions. It looked much more serious. So we were concerned if we were going to be able to come back home.
In this show, we're going to get the views of Johanna Kirkland, Schroders Chief Investment Officer, on how this new COVID variant might impact markets.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
First, we're going to start with what we know about the virus right now.
Essentially, the initial indications are that it is quite infectious. So, for example, in Europe at the moment, we're seeing cases rising 5% per day. There's some evidence of cresting. In South Africa at the moment, infection rates are rising by 17% a day. So essentially what we're seeing is quite a high level of infection. By the end of this week, we should start to get some information on to what extent this mutation evades the vaccines. So Pfizer and Moderna are already doing this work. We should start to get some indications on that, as I said, over the next one to two weeks, essentially. So that's step one, is understanding to what extent vaccines are effective against this. Obviously, if they're seen not to be effective, then that could result in more restrictions on economic activity. On a 2 to 4 week time horizon, we'll have more information on the transmissibility of the virus. So to what extent, what is it R number, essentially. And really to get a hold on the most important information, which is basically the severity of the virus, the danger of hospitalization, that will take 1 to 2 months because, unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to sound this is rather morbid, but obviously there's a gap between getting infected and dying from it. Let's acknowledge right now we have very little information. It does seem to be quite infectious. But basically, by the end of this week, we should start to know whether the vaccines are effective. The challenge we have is that at the moment we're watching infection in an economy that's in a very different state to us, not only in terms of the levels of vaccination, but also, you know, for example, the number of people living with HIV, because it seems to be that this mutation developed in someone who had HIV. So it's very hard to draw conclusions on its ability to outrun the vaccines, because really you have low levels of vaccination. The key thing we're watching in South Africa, and again, it's very morbid, is the rate of hospitalization in the Gauteng province. that is the information we really need out of South Africa right now, is the extent to which this helps us to sense the danger of hospitalization, which still won't be a straightforward parallel because, again, they're not vaccinated. But, you know, the initial indications are the symptoms are quite mild. So if it then turns out that even in an unvaccinated population, the rate of hospitalization is contained, that's bullish.
So if there's a chance of a relatively positive outcome, how should we view risk in the markets?
I think the first step to say is that we've moved on a lot. This is stating the obvious, but I think we need to put this to one side. We've moved on a lot from March 2020 in the sense that in March 2020, we had no idea what the reaction function of governments was. We had no idea how you know, we've learned an enormous amount about how these viruses move. Obviously, the scientists are able to analyze new mutations incredibly quickly. Our testing capabilities off the charts. Ultimately, a lot of us have been vaccinated, particularly in the developed world, which does help with the danger of hospitalization. So we're definitely not back to March 2020. I think that's important. So we shouldn't oversteer in that direction, say, oh, damn it, let's just get out of risk entirely. I don't think one should do that. On the other hand, I don't think it's appropriate to use this as a buying opportunity either because of the uncertainties. Not time for oversteering in any direction. We need to recognize the uncertainty, but I also think there's no need to get incredibly bearish yet.
And what about inflation as a risk?
We still have that inflation risk. And, you know, ironically as well, with this variant, the risk is you get more supply disruptions. So inflation is still a risk. What this means for central bank policies, you know, we've had below consensus views on central banks raising rates. We always thought they would be behind the curve in terms of raising rates. And I think this, again, supports that view. So we think that central bank liquidity will remain in place. And you see, the interesting thing is that to the extent that we get, if this variant ends up being a problem and, you know, growth really weakens next year and the Fed is on hold, I mean, ultimately, you still get these supply disruptions, labor market disruptions. Ultimately, over the long term, you still have inflation risk there. So, you know, one of the things we've been talking about was that for 2022, we could see inflation rates peaking as some of these supply side disruptions kind of sort of eased. And we were more concerned about the medium term trends for the labor market. In some sense, this kind of situation compounds that. Right. So I still think that inflation is a medium term risk. We've been saying that we're moving into the next stage, which is expansion, where typically that growth cycle is maturing. Growth momentum is peaking. Typically, inflationary pressures are increasing. All of these are typical of all cycles. This time round, it's more extreme because of the virus and more uncertain in some ways. But essentially, some of the things we're seeing are quite typical of this phase of the cycle. And therefore, it does make sense to be a little bit more diversified in this phase of the cycle. As I said, I don't think it's a time for oversteering. I think it's a time for being exposed still.
Which would be brave given how highly rated some areas of the market are, such as equities. So how should we view valuation risk?
Typical of this phase, as the cycle matures, typically you are dealing with more expensive valuation. I think the more we can draw on that, right, because, again, it's appropriate to be more diversified. We were taking very punchy bets a year ago. We're not today because, actually, we have to recognise valuations have got more expensive. Now, crucially, though, I mean, ironically, if this variant ends up suppressing growth, it does mean that rates stay lower for longer, you know. So the reason why equity valuations are being sustained is because yields are so low. And because central banks are very loose. And in some sense, this variant does support the idea that central banks stay loose. So it's not all doom and gloom on the valuation side. Things are likely to be a bit more volatile. At this stage of the cycle, you do need to be more diversified. You do recognize valuations are expensive. You do need to rely more on active stock picking. I don't think this is the time to be taking massive, big macro bets. It's not the right phase of the cycle to do that. Last year was the year we did that. At this phase of the cycle, it's much more nuanced. And I think, you know, maybe even thematic allocations are still interesting here. You know, I just don't think it's time to take heroic bets on the direction of the virus. But I think there's some themes out there which are sort of independent of that. When I'm confronted with something I don't know anything about, which is essentially this virus, right, I have to think, well, what would I be doing anyway at this phase of the cycle, irrespective of the virus, which will also be helpful if the virus news gets worse. And the kind of things I'd be doing at this phase of the cycle would be to increase my diversification, to try and identify areas of the market which are less vulnerable to the cyclical risks which are increasing.
And those risks could be magnified in emerging markets given their general low vaccination rates.
I mean, focusing on China, first of all, China was looking quite cheap, having underperformed a lot already. And also looking into next year, what was interesting about China was we thought we could see a world where China be easing while the rest of the world be raising rates. Now, again, if the variant proves to be, continues to be of concern, then in some sense it pulls back rate expectations in the developed world. So I think it maybe reduces the argument for reallocating to China. But, you know, we do think it is an interesting market given it's underperformed so much this year. And ultimately in China, you know, vaccination is reasonably high. For the rest of the emerging world, essentially, it is more vulnerable to set the vaccination rates are lower. It is more vulnerable to the twists and turns of the pandemic. So I think, again, it highlights some of the challenges of investing in emerging economies right now. And ultimately, if you're going to get a desynchronized recovery with different economies recovering from this at different speeds, based on the level of infection, based on the level of vaccination, based on the policy tools they have available, you know, emerging markets benefit the most from a strong, synchronized global recovery. I think that's very low probability right now.
But what about the main themes, apart from energy transition, that investors should be focusing on?
Digital infrastructure is one we've added. The reason why we like digital infrastructure is because it's quite diversifying from a style perspective. It's less growth-oriented than some of the others. Global disruption, again, is... I mean, it's actually all the same ones, the same food and water. I mean, all of the themes are interesting to us because by definition, they're designed to be sort of impervious to the economic environment. The main challenge you face with some of those themes is you end up with exposure to growth risk, as in the fact exposure to growth. They tend to be growthy strategies. If yields are low, actually that supports those thematic allocations. Irrespective of this variant, you know, this pandemic ultimately, we'll look back on it in the future. It'll be something we'll have gone on for, you know, a few years. I mean, we're now 2 years in. It's probably going to be around for at least another year. And ultimately, the disruption it's creating is, and the acceleration of some of the inescapable truths and all of that means we are in a highly disrupted world. And therefore, I think these thematic allocations, which really look into the future, are very important. So, again, for me, the theme for next year continues to be one of disruption, not of everything's going back to normal. That again... See, I'm trying to say things that I would say irrespective of the virus, irrespective of Omicron. I haven't got the pronunciation right yet. But basically, irrespective of the latest mutation, we had that view, right, that we're still in a disrupted environment, that actually we've seen, you know, the emphasis on climate change, the emphasis on income inequality. And this is what our themes are really designed to benefit from, right? We're not going to stop using technology if economies reopen. We've changed the way we use technology. That's here to stay. And actually, the disruption caused by labor market shortages is encouraging companies even more to automate. So, you know, the increased adoption of technology is not something that's going to go into reverse. Because disruption, ultimately, what it means is basically buying stocks that maybe today don't have high exposure in the indices. The indices are always representative of what's just worked over the last decade. And, you know, obviously some of the FANGs continue to do well, but a lot of this disruption is smaller, medium-sized stocks, which are underrepresented in traditional indices. So yes, it is. I think it is supportive of that approach. But I think the big picture is what we need to focus on is some of the frameworks we already had in place, which we think don't change in spite of this mutation. At the margin, what has changed is, you know, it's probably appropriate to reduce cyclical risk a little bit.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.